I want you to picture a scenario. It's something we've all seen. You're walking down Main Street, maybe you're grabbing a coffee or something, and you pass a shop window, and there, taped to the glass, is a help wanted sign.
Oh yeah, a classic image. You can almost see the paper, curling at the corners. The ink might be fading from the sun. Probably been there for weeks.
Exactly. For
Yeah.
weeks is just part of the background noise of life. But here's the thing that, I mean, it drives me absolutely crazy when I stop to think about it. At that exact moment, I know for a fact there are people in this town, maybe even on this block, who are sitting on their couch, refreshing job boards, just desperate for work.
It creates a real sense of cognitive dissonance, doesn't it? You have the supply, the worker, you have the demand, the open job. They're right there, but they just aren't connecting.
It feels like a glitch in the matrix. I mean, if the economy were that perfect machine we get taught about in Econ 101, shouldn't that sign just vanish the second an unemployed person walked past? They'd collide, shake hands, and boom, problem solved. So why is there this gap?
Well, what you're describing, that perfect instantaneous collision, that's what economists call a frictionless market. It's a theoretical fantasy land. In that world, finding a worker or finding a job happens at the speed of light.
But we do not live in that world.
We do not. Anyone who has ever spent months, doom scrolling LinkedIn knows that.
We live in a world of waiting and interviewing and ghosting and all those polite rejection emails that say, we'll keep your resume on file. And that messy, sticky, frustrating reality is exactly what we are unpacking
We're
today.
doing a deep dive into Chapter 20, Frictional Labor Markets by Toshihiko Mukoyama and Aishigu Shahin. This text is essentially a roadmap to that black box of the labor market. It explores why unemployment spikes so violently, why it takes so long to recover, and why two people doing the exact same job might get paid very different amounts.
So our mission today is to figure out why the gears grind. We're going to look at the math behind the madness of job hunting. So let's start right there with that core concept, friction. It sounds like a physics term. What does it actually mean here?
Think about it like shopping. The source material uses a really helpful analogy: chocolate.
Okay, you have my full and undivided attention.
If you just want, like, basic sugar, you can buy it anywhere, instantly. Every gas station has it. That's effectively a frictionless market. But let's say you want a specific kind of artisanal dark chocolate with sea salt and caramel.
Right, I can't just walk into the 7-Eleven for that.
Exactly. You have to search. You might have to check three different stores, travel across town, compare prices. That time, that effort, that fuel cost, that is the friction.
And in the labor market, people are way more complicated than chocolate bars.
Significantly. Economists call this heterogeneity.
Yeah.
Every worker is different, and every job is different. A firm doesn't just need a human. They need someone with Python skills,
Yeah.
who lives in Chicago, who's willing to work nights, and, fits the company culture.
And the worker doesn't just want money. They want a specific commute, good benefits, a boss who isn't a nightmare.
Precisely. And finding that specific match takes time. It takes resources. And that delay, that search time, is what creates unemployment. Even in a booming economy, you're technically unemployed while you're searching.
And the data shows this, right? It's not like unemployment is just some steady line.
Right. If you look at the U.S. unemployment charts over the last 70 years, there's no long-term trend of it just going up and up. But what you do see are these massive, violent spikes.
The vertical lines on the chart, the Great Recession, the COVID crash.
Exactly. Unemployment shoots up like a rocket and comes down like a feather. And crucially, it never hits zero. Because of friction, there are always people between jobs. The economists actually visualize this with something called the beverage curve.
The beverage curve sounds like a sophisticated 1920s dance move. I'm guessing it's a graph.
It is a graph, yeah.
Yeah.
It plots two things against each other. On one axis, you have the unemployment rate. On the other, the vacancy rate, the number of open jobs. So how do you think those two relate?
Well, logically, they'd be opposites. If unemployment is high, the economy is probably bad, so companies aren't hiring. Vacancies should be low. And if everyone's hiring, unemployment should be low, a teeter-totter.
That's the logic. And generally, that holds up, the curve slopes downward. But the profound thing about the beverage curve is that it shows these two things coexisting. You can have millions of unemployed people and millions of empty job slots at the exact same time.
That's the inefficiency right there. That's the proof that the gears are grinding.
Exactly. If the market were frictionless, we'd always be at the edges. The fact that we sit in the middle with simultaneous vacancies and unemployment proves that friction is a real measurable force holding people and jobs apart.
Okay, so we know the friction exists. We see it. We feel it. But how do economists actually model this? How do you turn it's hard to find a job into a mathematical formula?
This brings us to the absolute engine of modern labor economics. It's called the DMP model.
Yeah.
Diamond, Mortensen, Pissarides, after the three Nobel laureates who developed it. And the best way to think about the DMP model is that it's basically the algorithm for a macroeconomic dating app.
I love that. So the economy is basically Tinder.
In a structural sense, yes. It focuses on the search and matching process. It starts with the firm. In this model, posting a vacancy isn't free. It's an investment.
Right. You have to pay for the LinkedIn ad, pay the recruiter. The source calls this cost $2.
Correct. A firm pays up front, betting that they'll find a worker later, and that worker will generate enough profit to cover that cost. And the thing that determines if they find someone is the matching function.
This is the black box of the model.
Yes. The matching function is a formula. You feed in the number of unemployed people, the number of vacancies, and it spits out the number of matches or new hires that happen.
And there's a key metric here, right? Labor market tightness.
Yes, theta. It's the ratio everyone watches. Vacancies divided by unemployment. If theta is high, the market is tight. Lots of jobs, few workers.
Which is great for the worker, but terrible for the firm.
Precisely. Now, here's where the dating app analogy gets really interesting. Let's say the algorithm works. A firm and a worker match. They swipe right. Now what? In a standard model, the wage is just set by the market. But here, they've already found each other. They've invested time.
They're committed.
They are in what economists call a bilateral monopoly. The firm can't easily swap this worker for someone else. That'd mean paying dollars all over again. And the worker can't just walk away without falling back into the unemployment pool.
So they both have leverage. It's a standoff.
Exactly. So they determine the wage by bargaining. The job creates a certain amount of value, a surplus. The DMP model assumes they split this surplus using something called Nash bargaining.
Which is basically a mathematical formula for who has the upper hand.
It's a power struggle expressed as math. The formula gives a bargaining power variable to the worker. If they have high bargaining power, they get a bigger slice of the pie. The wage isn't just about your skill, it's about your leverage.
This brings up a huge question about efficiency. We usually assume free markets are efficient, but if we're all just stumbling around trying to find matches, is this system actually efficient?
That is a critical question. And the DMP model reveals that these search markets suffer from what are called congestion externalities.
Like traffic.
Exactly like traffic. When a firm posts a vacancy, they're trying to help themselves. But by adding one more ad to the pile, they make it slightly harder for every other firm to find a worker. They congest the market.
And I assume it works the other way. If I start looking for a job, I'm another resume in the stack, making it harder for you to get noticed.
Exactly. You're clogging up the queue. And because individual actors don't account for this, the free market might create too many vacancies or too few. It's almost never perfectly efficient.
Is it ever efficient?
Well, there is a theoretical sweet spot. It's called the Hozio's condition.
The Hozio's condition. Sounds like a medical diagnosis.
It does, doesn't it? It's actually a very elegant mathematical coincidence. It says the market is efficient only if the worker's bargaining power perfectly matches the elasticity of the matching function.
Okay, translate that into human speak for me.
Basically, if the worker's slice of the pie reflects exactly how much their participation helps the matching process, all the traffic jams sort of cancel each other out.
But I'm guessing in the real world, we rarely hit that bullseye.
Almost never. It's a theoretical benchmark, not a reality.
Okay, so we have this model. It has friction, it has bargaining, it has traffic jams. But here's where the story takes a turn. The source points out that when economists took this DMP model, this Nobel Prize winning model, and plugged in real world numbers, it broke.
It didn't just break. It failed spectacularly in one specific area. This is famously known as the Shimer puzzle.
The Shimer puzzle. Okay, walk us through it. What didn't fit?
It's all about volatility. In the real world, productivity, how much stuff we make per hour, is actually pretty stable. It moves maybe 1 or 2%. But unemployment, it goes crazy, it doubles, it triples.
Right. Small bumps in productivity, giant jumps in unemployment.
But when they ran the basic DMP model, it predicted that unemployment should be, well, calm. The model said that when productivity drops, wages should drop instantly too.
Because of that Nash bargaining we talked about.
Exactly. The pie gets smaller. So the formula just says, okay, we both take a smaller slice. The firm's profit margin stays roughly the same. So they have no real reason to stop hiring.
So the model predicted we'd all just take a slight pay cut in a recession and keep working. But in reality, companies panic. They freeze hiring and start layoffs.
Correct. The model was just too smooth. It couldn't explain the panic.
So how do we fix it? What's the leading theory for why companies freak out?
The most compelling answer comes down to two words. Rigid wages. Or sticky wages.
Sticky wages. That feels intuitive.
Right. The basic model assumes wages are flexible. But we all know wages don't really go down. If the economy has a bad quarter, your boss doesn't walk in and say, hey, we're cutting your hourly rate by 4% this month.
No. That would cause a riot. You just don't get a raise, or worst case, you get laid off.
Exactly. Wages are sticky. Now imagine the math here. Let's say a firm makes $100 of revenue per worker and pays them $95. The profit is $5.
Okay, thin margin.
Now, productivity drops just 2%. Revenue falls from 100 to 98. In the old flexible model, the wage would drop to, say, 93. And the firm still makes $5. No problem.
But with sticky wages, the wage stays at 95.
Right. Revenue's 98. Wage is stuck at 95. Profit drops from $5 to 3.
Whoa, wait. The revenue dropped 2%, but the profit dropped
40%.
That is massive.
It's a leverage effect. The sticky wage acts like a lever. It magnifies the pain for the firm. A tiny dip in the economy completely obliterates their profit margin.
And if the profit is obliterated, that investment costs the dollars to find a new worker. It looks like a terrible, terrible idea.
The incentive to post vacancies vanishes. The firm stops hiring immediately.
So because the price of labor can't adjust, the quantity of labor adjusts instead, we get unemployment.
Precisely. When you force the model to have rigid wages, suddenly the graph looks like reality. Small drops in productivity lead to huge spikes in unemployment. It solves the Scheimer puzzle.
The source also mentioned endogenous separations.
That's a fancy way of saying firing people. In the simple model, people lose their jobs at a constant random rate, like a coin flip.
Which is not how the world works.
Right. Firms choose to fire people, especially when profits get squeezed. By upgrading the model to allow firms to make that choice, to say this match is no longer profitable, we get even closer to reality.
Okay, I want to shift gears a bit. We've been talking big picture, but let's talk about the listener's paycheck. One of the most baffling things is finding out someone else doing the exact same job is making 20% more.
Yes. Wage dispersion.
Why does this happen? If we have the same skills, shouldn't the market pay us the same?
In a frictionless world, yes. But here we need a different framework called the McCall search model.
How's this different from the dating app model?
The DMP model looks at the whole ecosystem. The McCall model zooms in on just you, the unemployed worker, and your personal decision making.
Okay, so I'm the main character now.
In this model, you get one offer at a time. Today, you get an offer for $20 an hour. You have to decide, take it or say no, and keep searching, hoping for $25 tomorrow.
But searching takes time, and while I'm searching, I'm not earning.
Exactly. There's an option value to waiting. The model calculates a specific number called the reservation wage, or TEC.
The reservation wage. That's my bottom line. I won't go lower than this.
It is the absolute lowest salary you will accept. If an offer is one penny below $10, you reject it. If it's at or above, you take it.
And this depends on my situation, right?
Crucially, yes. It depends on things like unemployment benefits. If benefits are high, your cost of waiting is lower, you can be picky, your reservation wage goes up.
And if benefits are running out,
your reservation wage drops, and you take the first decent offer you see.
So this explains why wages vary. I might have taken a lower wage because I was desperate. You might have held out and gotten a higher one.
That is the theory. It makes intuitive sense.
Yeah.
But here is the final bombshell from the source. They did the math on this, too, to see if friction alone could explain the huge inequality we see.
Right.
They calculated something called the mean-min ratio. They compared the average wage to the lowest wage people accept.
How big was the gap?
The result was,
well,
disappointing. The back-of-the-envelope calculation suggested a ratio of about 1.03.
Wait, 1.03. So the average wage is only 3% higher than the lowest wage?
Correct.
That's tiny. Real-world wage gaps are massive. It's definitely more than 3%.
Exactly. This is the frictional wage dispersion puzzle. The standard search model suggests that friction alone, just the luck of the draw, can only explain a tiny amount of wage inequality.
So if the model says the gap should be 3%, but the real gap is 50 or 100%, what are we missing?
The model really struggles unless the cost of unemployment is incredibly, incredibly painful. Basically, it suggests there must be other forces at play. or that the pain of unemployment is much higher than we model.
That is fascinating. We started this thinking friction was the answer to everything.
And we're ending with the realization that friction explains why it takes time to find a job and why unemployment spikes. But it only explains a small fraction of why our paychecks look so different.
It's a good reminder that economics is about refining the map.
That's right. You build a model to explain the world, and the ways it fails, like the Scheimer puzzle or this wage dispersion puzzle, tell you even more than the ways it succeeds.
So let's wrap this up. We've gone from the help wanted sign to the intricate dating app algorithm of the DMP model.
We saw how that algorithm creates a traffic jam of externalities, so the free market isn't always efficient.
We looked at the mystery of the Scheimer puzzle, why unemployment swings so wildly, and solved it with sticky wages. Firms stop hiring because their profits get leveraged into oblivion.
And finally, we looked at the McCall model, which tells us that while searching creates some wage differences, it doesn't account for the massive inequality we actually see.
It really changes how you look at the economy. It's not a static picture. It's a flow.
That's the key takeaway. The labor market isn't a place. It's a flow of people and decisions. It's millions of people calculating their reservation wage, millions of firms calculating vacancy costs, and all the friction that slows it all down.
And next time you see that now hiring sign, you'll know it's not just a sign. It's a vacancy cost time. It's a failed match. It's friction in action.
And it's a sign that the algorithm hasn't found its solution yet.
I want to leave you with one final thought. If the math says search friction only accounts for a 3% difference in wages, but you know you're earning way less or way more than that, what are the other invisible hands reaching into your paycheck? Is it negotiation skill? Is it pure luck? Or is the system just stickier and more complex than we ever imagined?
Something to think about during your next performance review.
Thanks for listening to this deep dive into the friction of finding work. We'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.